On this episode of the New York, New York Baseball Podcast, Wally, we take a deep dive, a nice long sit down with Keith Hernandez.
Yes, we do. You know, I read his book, and I must tell you, as baseball books go, this is really good. It's not ball four, but it's a really good look at what it means to be a struggling young player who develops into a terrific player, as Keith Hernandez did.
We'll also talk about his beloved cat, Haji, him joining Twitter, and we'll also have to talk a little bit about the New York Mets. They were busting out last night in Cincinnati, and the Yankees can't lose, winners of 15 of 16, and now they bring on Boston.
Absolutely. So we got one team in town that can't lose and one team that seems to have forgotten how to win.
It's the New York, New York Baseball Podcast coming up next. All right, hope everyone had a great weekend out there. We're back with another edition of New York, New York. Dan Canobio, Wallace Matthews.
Thank you, Dan. I'm very, very well. I hope that you all had a week as good as the Yankees had and not as bad as the Mets did.
Yeah, I was going to say, what do you want to do here? You want the good or the bad? You want to talk about the pretty girl or you want to talk about the ugly girl?
Well, you know, you have to deal with both at times. And I was on the Mets this past week, so I was there for all six of those losses, and they were like increasingly ugly.
Wally shows up to Citi Field for the first time in a long time.
It's not my fault.
Matt Harvey gets designated for assignment. The Mets get blown out. It's just like, I tweeted at you, but Wally's bringing that magic beans and pixie dust back.
On the bright side, Mr. Met didn't flip anybody off.
He might have.
He may have, but it wasn't caught on anybody's cell phone.
So we have a big show for you today, Wallace Matthews. You pulled another one. You pulled another string here. You got us our biggest shark yet. He's the big man.
Yes, sirree. Keith Hernandez is going to join us today. And you know what? He's going to be great because I read his book. I spent actually...
I'm Keith Hernandez.
Yeah, that's right. And that's actually the name of the book.
Yeah.
I spent a few hours reading the book over the past couple of days, and I was just absorbed in it. It was it's terrific. It's a look at him from the beginning of his baseball career as a minor leaguer to... basically when he won the MVP in 1979 and the struggles that he went through. It's actually something that a lot of major leaguers should read because one thing they'll see is that, you know, it doesn't come easy to everybody right away. The other thing is, and Keith made this point in the book, is that if he had been coming up in the sabermetrics age, nobody would have taken a second look at him. He was drafted way down in the draft.
Yeah.
You know, not a power hitter. He's a line drive hitter. Today, he's the kind of guy that they would look at and say, you know what, this guy's not a prospect. Meantime, he was a borderline Hall of Famer.
It was a really fun conversation. We talked about Matt Harvey getting designated for assignment. We talked about the struggles of Conforto, how he can get fixed. You know,
he actually should read the book because he might see himself.
Yeah,
you know, in
exactly.
terms of the adjustments that had to be made.
It'd be surprising. We talked about him if he ever thought about getting into managing. And then the fun stuff, you know, with Haji the Cat joining Twitter, living in Sag Harbor, driving.
I think he liked talking about that stuff more than baseball.
Yeah, he kind of perked up when his cat came in. Haji, who was a superstar in its own right. But you're not going to want to miss this conversation with Keith Hernandez. But as for the Mets, Matt Harvey, designated for assignment on Friday night. Your Friday night news dump was Matt Harvey. You got
dumped.
Yeah,
and
Matt
Harvey's done. It was interesting because, you know, I go to cover the game. We're waiting, you know, Mickey Callaway comes out to talk to the media at like 4 o'clock before every game. And there's a delay. It's about 10 minutes. And then the door opens up and Mickey doesn't walk in. But Sandy Alderson does. And Everybody goes, uh-oh, something's up.
The Maverick's here.
And honestly, the first thing I thought was he's going to tell us that DeGrom was going on the DL, which he would wind up doing 2 days later. You know, because the day before they told us that DeGrom is fine, everything's, you know, nothing to worry about, he's going to pitch, blah, blah, blah. Now here comes Sandy, I'm sure they're telling me DeGrom's having Tommy John surgery or something.
Yeah.
And when, you know, he broke the news of Matt Harvey, everybody was just, you know, slack-jawed, like, whoa. You know, look, we all knew Matt Harvey was in trouble. You know, we knew he was not cutting it. We knew that he's not popular either in the clubhouse or, you know, with the front office. I don't care what they tell you publicly. Believe me, they had their fill of this guy. But just the fact that this guy went from the Dark Knight 3 years ago to being DFA'd
Joker
Friday
now.
Night. The Joker's right.
The Penguin.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, pick any villain you want is what he is. It was just amazing. I was pretty shocked by it. But honestly, I'm not surprised he did not accept the minor league assignment because the Mets are paying – $5 million of whatever he get, wherever he goes, the Mets are on the hook for all but a prorated portion of the major league minimum, yeah. which is about $400,000 with what's left in the season.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you take a chance on him? I could see even the Yankees taking a chance on
that
him.
That was one thing I was going to say. I mean, can you stop with the – I just don't understand the fascination with the him coming to the Yankees. The people that want that are people that watch way too many movies. They think this. They think it's a script.
Well, I like it for the comedic value because
right, the entertainment.
Mets, because no, well, here's why. Because the Mets always try to portray themselves as the little brothers. Like we can't keep up with the Yankees. They have all the money, and they'd be paying this guy's salary to pitch for the Yankees.
Yes.
That would be hilarious.
It would be funny, but I don't want him. I don't want him. Listen, the guy's. He's like you said. I believed in him early on.
I know
he showed
you did.
Me nothing. His attitude sucked, blah, 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 blah. We've all been there. But we don't need him. The Yankees don't need him. They don't need the baggage that comes along with it. They don't need the 7 ERA that comes along with him. I mean,
well,
we got Domingo Germán.
I agree. Oh, yeah, he's made Harvey obsolete. But let's not take one game and put a guy in the Hall of Fame, all right?
Or with Domingo.
Yes, the same way you can't take one game where if a guy gets shelled and say, this guy will never be any good. I mean, it just doesn't work. Baseball doesn't work that way. But the truth of the matter is, if Harvey was willing to buy into another role, as David Cone said with us last week, let's say he said, you know what, I will go to the bullpen. This guy could maybe be like a dynamite electric arm coming out of the bullpen.
He could be a closer.
Seventh or eighth inning. He could replace Betances, or he could be a closer.
He could
You're
be a closer.
Right.
You throw 94 and you have enough movement on it and you can find spots. Look at the closer on the Rockies. He's Holland. Oh,
right.
I don't know what team he's on
well,
now.
What about,
but
let's think about a guy like John Smoltz, as great a pitcher as he was
right.
able to make the adjustment.
Gotta,
I mean,
exactly.
I just don't think that Harvey's mindset at this point, he still thinks he's the Dark Knight. He still thinks, you know, he's the stud ace of the staff, which he's not anymore. And he's still, you know, absolutely committed to blowing guys away with that fastball. And he hasn't been able to do that in quite a while.
Yeah, we don't know what that fastball was sitting at 92, 93. We're going to see. Now, there's some interest from the Rangers. There's some interest from the
Yeah, but why wouldn't anybody
Giants?
Pay? Why would anybody trade for the guy? You just wait out the 7 days.
It doesn't
days
make
and
sense.
He's a free agent. Why would you give anything
I don't get
up?
That either. You got to just play that one out if you're one of these teams. But as for the Mets, they had a very rough homestand, 0-6. Cespedes goes down, but he comes back, self-diagnosed himself once again,
that's right.
Looked at his quad, not so
but
bad.
But more importantly,
back.
Shut out 3 times at home.
Yeah, the offense is just anemic. I mean, last night they bust out. We're recording this on Tuesday. Was it May 8th right now? And last night in Cincinnati, it was something I was thinking on Sunday. I was like, how can I come on this podcast and talk about how the sky isn't falling for the Mets? How you let's just relax here. You go on Twitter, I mean, it is just doom and gloom. But, you know,
but
take a look.
That's the lot of being a Mets fan. You're always expecting, you know, the roof to fall in on you, even when it was 11-1.
I know.
But the point is they did show some power last night, and that's what they're built around.
That's what I wanted to say.
It's a home run hitting team.
Yeah,
you know?
Conforto busted out with a home run. You had 2 home runs from Adrian Gonzalez. They started to hit, but the offense has been anemic. The pitching staff behind, even Syndergaard struggling at this point. I mean, and beyond that, I mean, now with DeGrom going down, this is a complete Met the bunglings of a situation. If they would have just put him on the DL like they should have, they would have saved the roster spot, and maybe Seth Lugo could have pitched last night. You know, Conlon didn't pitch bad. I mean, he didn't pitch great either. But it's just another Met thing where they say, first it comes out that he's going to miss 4 starts. That was misinformation. Then it comes out that
he might miss those 4. It might not be misinformation.
And then it comes out maybe he'll start on Monday. And then in the back of your mind,
No, we were told he was definitely starting. I was sitting there. I was looking into Mickey Callaway's eyes. He's starting. He's fine. Everything's okay. Then we went in and talked to DeGrom. I asked DeGrom.
Oh,
he's
really?
Saying DeGrom said he was he said, I'm going to try to think of exactly the word he said. He said, whatever it was, the word he used, I repeated it back to him. I said, are you saying that you're pain-free, like this never happened?
Right.
He goes, yeah, I don't feel a thing, man. Everything is fine.
Yeah, but even if that's
Friday.
The case, just put him on the, you know, cautionary move. Put him on the precautionary. Put him on the DL. Have it, you know, just so he can think, you know, I can just get my way back here and I eventually pitch. But they bungled it. They bungled it. The Mets bungled it. But then you take a look on the other side of town, the pretty girl. At the dance.
Everything's going right for the pretty girl.
Everything's
right now.
Coming up Milhouse for the Yankees. That's a Seinfeld reference. It's a Simpsons reference. But this is an historic stretch, Wally. Whenever you bring up the words 1998 or the year 1998 and you start, you know, throwing that around, 15 of 16, that's when you start to think, wow, this team, I don't know. You know, we thought about what they could be in the offseason, And we talked about, can this team overtake first place? Could this team get to the World Series last year? They were a game away. But did you ever, I don't know if I ever thought that they would look, you know, this good.
No, I don't think anybody did. And, you know, including them, they would tell you that. Nobody expects to win 14 out of 15 games. Nobody expects to keep pace with a team ahead of them that was at one point playing like eight, nine ball.
17-2 at
one
point, the Red Sox.
Now they're right behind the Red Sox, and they're starting a three-game series tonight at Yankee Stadium. I'll be there. I know you're going to go as well. Right.
I'm going tonight as a fan. I'll be sitting down in section 109. If anyone wants to come say hello, I'll be signing autographs.
Tremendous. I'll come down and get one. I'll be up in the press box drinking the miserable coffee and freezing. It's going to be cold tonight.
Is it?
Yeah. I think it's going to go into the 50s. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's why I'm dressed this way. I see you're you dressed about the same way.
I got
very
my,
nice.
Sugar Ray Robinson.
Greatest of all time.
Because I'm about to interview Bob Arum after this for my podcast.
And that'll make it, you know, Bob actually promoted Sugar Ray Robinson.
Probably. He's that old.
Yeah. So anyway, here's the real indication that things are going well for the Yankees. Sonny Gray is pitching well.
Sonny got his groove back. We said it last week. He looked awesome.
And then beyond that, again, and of course you mentioned Domingo Germán pitches 6 no-hit innings in his first start.
On Sunday. Domingo. His name is it's Spanish for
Sunday.
And
that's
he
exactly
pitches.
Right.
And there were some fans out there that were upset that he got taken out of the game. Come on.
You know, I could see that. You know,
pitches.
Too bad. We should ask Keith Hernandez about that. If you were a manager, would you take a guy out who's pitching a no-hitter after 6 innings?
Well, what team was it? It was the Dodgers had a combined no-hitter the other night in Monterrey, Mexico.
Yeah, I know.
So it's not a big thing anymore taking – I mean, Dave Roberts
has done
it. It's
not a big thing to the manager. It's a big thing to the pitcher.
Yeah, but, you know, you got a feeling with Domingo Germán, he threw 60 pitches was his season high coming into the game. They wanted to push him maybe 10 more, 15 more to 75. He had 84 pitches through 6 no-hit innings. You got to figure if he goes 3
more
innings, if he goes the full 9 and he throws 15 pitches per inning, do the math right there. That's 45 more pitches. He's up to like 115. Is that really necessary?
That's not unheard of. You
and
know,
it's a 0-0 game, so there's no chance that
guys
he even
like
gets
Bob
the win.
Gibson and Nolan Ryan routinely threw 120, 130 pitches and pitched for decades.
Yeah, listen, it's a different
game. Now, the human body has somehow gotten weaker with all this training and this nutrition and the doctors and the chemistry and
the tainted meat,
the stuff we don't want to mess. Right, the Mexican beef, and suddenly the body can't throw more than 90 pitches. Come on, man.
Did you notice this, Wally? Now Boone is this is the opposite of it's not what you want. Boone's new thing is now, what more can you ask for?
He's right. It is what you want.
It's because with Girardi, it's not what you want.
Yeah, it was never what you want.
So now Boone, now they're asking, did you ever think Gleyber is going to be this good? Did you think that Andujar was going to have this much pop? Did you think Germán was going to be this good? Did you think the Yankees would? Did you think this team would win 15-60? What more can you ask for?
Well, translating me, I had no goddamn idea. That's what he's telling me.
I'm looking
you.
At Boone during the stretch, and I'm really starting to see for the first time that it's like, he's like thinking in my mind, holy crap, I'm the manager of the New York Yankees.
Yeah.
This team is about to go on, if they continue to play like they've been playing, this team is going to be in a position to win
140 games.
A lot. I love that. They're going to go on to win a lot of games, maybe some World Series, and it's just like, I just got the sense of a guy that like fell into a really good situation.
He's in a charm life. Listen, the guy married like a Playmate of the Year.
Yeah,
this guy has had like a charm life. He hit the home run that put them in the World Series. All right, he played the basketball game. Even that turned out all right. He played the basketball game. He got hurt. If that doesn't happen, A-Rod is not dating J-Lo. I'm telling you right now.
Okay, that just
right?
triggered
me. Because she would not know who the hell he was.
I'm triggered to
he
now.
Some guy playing in Texas.
Now we are, like I said, every week on the show, we're contractually obligated to bring up Alex Emmanuel Rodriguez.
Okay.
I'm pulling up his Instagram, and boy, is it a good one. Last night was the Met Gala. Wally, are you familiar with that?
Oh, yes, I am.
What is the Met Gala? I understand.
It's a collection of like art and pretentious people looking at paintings.
Yes, I know that everyone gets all dressed up and they wear ridiculous things on their head, but I never knew where they went.
Is this
after
the one where Tom Brady was dressed like a matador?
Yes, Tom Brady. Look at Tom Brady.
See what he's wearing.
Tom Brady is wearing some gold blazer.
Oh,
A-Rod posts a picture with Brady.
Rich Corinthian leather. He looks like he's selling cars, right? I don't know what he's doing. He looks like a mariachi band.
So A-Rod posts this picture with Brady. It says, "The amazing Tom Brady. I've known this 5-time world champion for a long time. Nobody does it better, and he's still going strong. Hashtag GOAT."
And A-Rod is wearing like a black on black tuxedo.
Yeah, he's
very
looking,
classy.
A-Rod's looking pretty good, I'm not gonna lie. But then
Tom looks ridiculous.
Now we go to the story here. Here's A-Rod, who's serving as like a proud mom taking pictures of J-Lo's backside.
Oh my lord. You know, he's probably contractually obligated to do that. Let me see this.
Speak of a guy in a really good situation. We just talked about Aaron Boone.
Yeah.
Is anyone in a better situation than A-Rod right now?
Well, I don't know. It looks like he's kind of like become an assistant to his girlfriend.
Only in that relationship can he be like playing second fiddle.
And I'm sure he loves it.
But he was at the Met Gala last night, and then good night he posts at 9 hours ago, and that was 24 hours before he called that marathon game on ESPN.
That's right. You know what? I bet you Keith Hernandez would have been at that if the Mets weren't out of town.
At the Met Gala,
yeah,
with his book.
Probably, but he's the kind of guy, like, he likes that kind of stuff. He's a pretty sophisticated guy. He likes a lot of music. He likes art.
Listen,
I could see him at that.
You're not going to want to miss this interview we have coming up with Keith Hernandez, because it's not your average baseball interview.
Hell no. He's never been your average guy. You know that just from listening to him.
Yeah, so it's going to be really good. Let's go to it right now. Here is the great Keith Hernandez.
All right, Dan, you know, you and I have had a lot of great guests on in our short time doing this podcast, but I don't think there's one that we've wanted more than the guy we're having on right now. Let me go through his resume, because nobody that we've had on can say these things. He's a 1986 World Series champion.
Correct.
With the Mets. NL MVP in 79, also the NL batting champion in 79. Five-time All-Star, 11-time Gold Glove winning first baseman, two-time Silver Slugger, three-time author, and the color commentator on SNY. And by the way, a budding Twitter star, Mr. Keith Hernandez, joins the NYNY Baseball Podcast right now. Keith, thanks so much for coming on with us today.
My pleasure, sitting here in Cincinnati in my hotel room, so I got nothing else to do, so it's perfect.
All righty. Listen, I want to start by talking about the Mets. Obviously, you know, you see a lot of them, and, you know, I covered some of the early games. They were 11-1. I didn't think they could possibly be as good as they seemed out of the gate, and then they went into a tailspin, which ended last night. They won the game, I believe it was 8-7 last night in Cincinnati. Where does this team really sit? Obviously, they're not as good as we thought they were in the beginning, but they're not as bad as they've looked in the past 2 weeks.
Well, they have a veteran lineup, so I think the veteran lineup is going to be able to handle the ups and downs of a season. They are not getting anything from Conforto right now. He was in a bad slump. Hopefully, last night, I like the fact that he used the opposite field. He hit a home run. I know we're in Cincinnati and the worst pitching staff, but what better prescription to get out of a slump than to face, you know, a staff that you can beef up on. I'm more concerned with the back end of the rotation. We're talking Vargas. We're talking Wheeler. Harvey's gone now, obviously Vargas has had two bad starts. He's going to be around no matter what. They gave him the two-year deal. Wheeler has been the same Wheeler, just his issues are command, and you know, it's going to be very difficult for them, the Mets, to have a really, really good season if they're only getting it out of Syndergaard and DeGrom. They can only pitch, you know, twice through the rotation. Both of them, you know, they're 1-2, and that's it. They're going to pitch in probably 64 games if they stay healthy. There's a lot of other season left, so I'm concerned. The bullpen, to me, I'm a little bit worried about. I never like having just one left-hander in the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
Blevins has been struggling this year with his breaking ball, getting it over, but he's a veteran. I think he'll figure it out. The other guys are young. They go after hitters, but, you know, it's a so-so bullpen. So that's more of my concern. I think the hitting will come, and they'll score runs like they were earlier in the year.
Keith, it's Dan. Thank you for coming on the podcast. And I know you talked about the bullpen. You talked about the pitching, which you're a little troubled with. But going back a little bit to the offense, and I want to talk about Conforto because I think he's so important to this offense. He busted out a little bit last night with that leadoff home run. But before that, where do you think his struggles lie? Because this is a guy that has all the potential in the world. I mean, this is not a 180 hitter. Do you think it's in his head, or do you think he's healthy? You know, how can you sum up Conforto so far on this season?
Well, I think he's pain-free as far as the shoulder is concerned. So he's gotten into a habit of dropping that back shoulder, and he's been under everything, and he's been pulling too much. And when you slump, you always get out in front. But he's had some really – I've said for a long time, he's had some really good cuts up there, and he just either hits them in the air or he fouls them back. You know, when you get a couple of good pitches to hit in a bat against a pitcher and you don't put them in play and you foul them back, you're allowing that pitcher, he's not going to make five, if you get six pitches, he's not going to make six fat ones. You're allowing him the chance to throw a real good one and get you out, where if you're red hot and you're on your game, he makes that mistake, that ball's in play, that at-bat's over, and most of the time it's successful. He needs to get on top of the ball a little more, and I don't know what's going on, if everything's a home run craze today, and I've said it a million times, they're going to ruin more hitters than they're going to help with this launch angle. I mean, the launch angle to me is kind of ridiculous. Of course, 23 degrees, you're going to hit the ball the furthest. 10 degrees, of course, it's going to be a ground ball. You know, anything above 50 degrees, of course, is going to be a pop-up or a fly. I mean, there's nothing. There's no new theory here. I just worry about organizations wanting home runs. And Sandy Alderson, this team doesn't have a lineup with the D. Gordons or Ichiros or Altuves, guys that can run and be set up guys that can set up for the big bats. This is a lineup that isn't very fast and relies on the long ball. And that's Alderson's has built this club that way. And they haven't been hitting home runs. I mean, last night, great. I mean, this ballpark's a joke here, but I hope it's for things that are important for things to come ahead, more positive. So you got to be happy with the home runs last night. But if they don't hit the home run, they're going to have some problems. But like I said, I do like the bench. Even though Reyes is struggling, I think the bench is pretty strong, and this is a veteran lineup. They'll shrug this off, and they're professionals. It's a long season. They'll be fine.
And Keith, you know, you're taking us into an area that I wanted to talk to you about a little bit later, but that's stuff that you go through in the book quite a bit. I mean, your dad drilled into you the importance of hitting line drives over home runs, right? And it seems like, you know, that's not the conventional wisdom these days. Have you ever considered, you know, becoming a hitting coach or a manager or in some way putting yourself in a position to advise players as more than just a broadcaster? Because we know that players don't listen to broadcasters.
I've never wanted to coach. And now, you know, I'm 64 now, and we made that trip out, to be honest with you. It's a young man's game. We made that trip out to San Diego, and we came back. The graveyard flight back on the charter, and then I didn't get to bed till 4:30 in the morning. And you know, I'm sleeping later. Yeah. You know, to be a manager, in the National League, you've got to be on point and very alert and looking ahead. And I just don't know if I would have that kind of it make me want to do it. I'd have to have that kind of intensity.
It just seems like you have a lot to offer that, you know, and unfortunately the players, I'm sure, look at you now as a member of the media rather than, you know, Keith Hernandez,
well,
the man with the resume that
they
I just
do
read
and they
off.
Don't. I mean, when Ralph Kiner was on the airplane flying with us, I picked Ralph's brain and asked him questions. You can always learn things from players from the past about hitting. They've got all the hitting coaches today, and I just don't want to get in their way. They're doing what they're doing down there, and there's a lot of extra hitting today, too much, I think. And for me, the coaches have to be there at 12 noon, and you don't leave till midnight. I mean, I'm not going to do that with my life.
It's a lot of work.
It's not going to do it.
You can't do that. I mean, you live all the way out in Sag Harbor. That would be even
you. Well, even if I live next door to City Field, I wouldn't do it. It's just too much.
It is too much.
Ridiculous. You know, the players come at 12 noon. They look over tape. I mean, good Lord. I got to the ballpark for a 7 o'clock game. I got to the park. We hit it. Well, we were 7:30 back then.
Right.
We were supposed to be dressed at 5. I left Manhattan at 3 o'clock and got to the ballpark around 3:45 and an hour and a half, around an hour 15 minutes before we had to go out in the field. That's not the way it is today.
Why do you think that is?
It's a long season, and I'm just not going to be a stadium rat. You're like in a bunker down there.
But you took the game as seriously as anybody playing today. Why do you think they get there so early now? Is it like kind of groupthink? Is it
overanalyzation?
It's necessary. If you don't, that would have been a malcontent today.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to be there and do their work.
But who are they showing? Who are they doing this for?
They got hitting going on in the cages. I mean, I would never. I only hit in the cage when it was raining. I hated to hit in the cage.
I heard you say that last night.
Yeah. So, you know, but these kids, I shouldn't say kids, these young men, they grow up in cages now. So they're used to it. And the cages are a lot bigger and spacious. We used to hit in like a little fine tunnel. Right. So I would always in the cage try to hit a line drive right back into the pitcher's screen, right back at him. But I never liked the idea that I don't see where my balls go in respect to the field. If I wanted to do extra hitting, and I did a lot of extra hitting when I was slumping over my career, I wanted to go out and hit on the field early, not in a cage.
Right. Now, especially if you're a launch angle guy, right? You're hitting the ball straight up into the air. You don't know where it's going.
Okay, sure. Right?
Keith, do you know that they're teaching Little League now, launch angle? Like, my nephew plays in, what does he play in, Nick? Roslyn
right,
Little League.
So what happens if that kid grows up to be like Altuve, like 5 foot 9 or 5 foot 8 or 5 foot 10, and can be a hell of a player like a Wally Backman, and you got him hitting up in the air and he's not strong enough.
A lot of pop outs,
fly balls. That's why I say it's going to ruin a lot more hitters than it's going to help.
Listen, I was always taught you hit through the ball. You hit down on the ball, it makes the ball rise up. I mean, it's just a different way of thinking now, and it's just like it's just what baseball is now. Like you said, the home runs, and if you're playing in Cincinnati in the bandbox, we saw, what, 8 home runs last night?
Yeah. You know, I was going to ask a stupid question, ask if you like today's brand of baseball, but I think you've answered it.
Well, no, I think it's been better. A lot of guys running around the bases now, a lot of manufactured runs, taking the extra base. It's been a better brand of baseball. I've enjoyed the games. Last year was just really difficult to watch. It was one base at a time. It was like the old 1950 American League, waiting for the 3-run home run and big, you know, bunch of truck horses out there. I'm finding it much more exciting to watch the games, and then the Mets are playing, and then they have, but even at least they're playing good solid ball. I mean, they haven't hit. When things don't work out, you don't pitch, you don't hit, and you wind up having that homestand that was 0-6. But that's part of baseball. But all in all, the games have been quicker. We've had a lot of games under 3 hours. It's been shocking, and I just think the game should not go over 3 hours.
But what's the solution? I mean, God, you know, Rob Manfred claims he's working on it, but what do you do to make it quicker?
There's too many 3-2 counts. They're talking about all this and that, and we'll cut back this, and you know, it's pitchers get 0-2 today, and it winds up 3-2. And that adds to their pitch count, which is so important today. It adds to the bullpen coming in. The bullpen, a lot of bullpens stink. You know, when you get 0-2 on a hitter, you've got the advantage. And when I always felt that if I was 0-2 off a pitcher and I got that count to 2-2, I turned the tables on him, particularly with men on base and late and close on a pressure situation.
Right.
There's a lot of they're going out and looking at arms, guys that can throw through a brick wall, and these guys don't learn how to pitch. They just blow the ball hard, and then when they lose a little bit, they can't make the adjustment. They've never been taught how to pitch, and I do feel that the steroid era with all the home runs, I do think it's still permeates in the game. It's ugly shadows still cast it over this game, where everybody fell in love with the home run. I think Major League Baseball wants the home run, and to me, the strikeout and the home run, which are prevalent now, particularly the strikeout, there's no action. It's boring.
They say chicks dig the long ball, Keith.
Yep. So you know, so I can sit here and moan and groan all I want, but I do think the game's coming back a little bit. And like I said, I've really enjoyed the game so far this year, where last year it was just a chore. Most of the games were just a chore, not because the Mets lost 90-plus games. It was just was just boring baseball. Yeah, and I think they're playing a more exciting brand now.
Now, Keith, we obviously have to talk about Matt Harvey. He got designated for assignment on, I think it was Friday afternoon. And first off, were you surprised that that was the move that the Mets made?
I was surprised that they made it so quickly. I don't know what's going on in the clubhouse. I felt that Matt wasn't happy in the bullpen, and the thought did cross my mind the way he was thrown, and he got beat up bad twice out of that bullpen the last two times, that it just crossed my mind, and I don't know this, but I said, well, is he trying to pitch himself off of this roster and off this team? But I don't know that. But he certainly got clocked, and I think the last time when he got ripped, that was probably the last straw. And I think it sends a message that the Mets now are not going to wait around, and they're going to get people out there to win. So I think all in all, it's better for Matt to get out of New York and go to a new environment and start fresh. You know, he's had the surgeries. You don't know if he can ever come back from it. But here's another guy that came up blowing and had the razor blade slider. And I just think when you throw that 91, 92-mile-an-hour slider and you're throwing 97 and everything is all out, every pitch, your elbow and your shoulder are not going to hold up over time. And then when you lose that little bit of fastball, that little bit of sharpness on the breaking ball, and all of a sudden you got a pitch – and you can't get off the corners. You don't know how to. They don't know how to make the adjustment.
See, that's the thing. We had David Cohn on last week, and he said, you know, Harvey's got to buy in A, to the bullpen role, and B, to the fact that he might have to become a different pitcher. Now, in your book, you talk all about making adjustments, and you know, baseball's constantly, you know, pitchers are adjusting to hitters and vice versa. And we've seen other pitchers do this. Obviously, great pitchers. Andy Pettit's done it. CeCe Sabathia did it. You know, Jim Boughton did it years ago. Remade himself as a knuckleballer. Does Matt Harvey have the mental makeup to not see himself anymore as a power pitcher, and maybe try something else?
Well, if he wants to stay in the game, I always looked at it this way. If you don't make it in this game, you're going to have to go to work like everybody else, you know, and there's no baseball's a great game to play. And today you can make a lot of money and play a game and have a lot of fun. And it's something you've wanted to do your whole life, as opposed to, you know, you have to get a real job, and you only get 2 weeks off a year.
It's not fun, and it doesn't pay that well.
So I think you better keep that in mind and put your ego aside and do what you have to do.
Was the partying really a big deal? I mean, you come from the 80s.
I did not hang out with Matt, so I can't speak to that.
I don't think there's any doubt that
no
the injuries.
I had no issue with him going up to Los Angeles, going to an open at a restaurant. He came to the ballpark on time the next day, and that's all that matters. I have no issue with that.
I agree with that. You know, but, I mean, the injuries were serious.
He's got to be a little smarter than that.
Yeah, the
he's already got that rep.
Right. That's absolutely right. You know what? Let's
can do it when you're successful, but the minute you're not, or you're hitting, you better stay in the shadow.
Right, because then it becomes an issue, and unfortunately, he made it into an issue. Now, obviously, there are teams out there that are interested in him, and I have no doubt, you know, that he'll either be traded or sign with somebody, because the Mets are paying most of the freight here, and it's a low risk proposition.
Well, I think I don't even know what I've read, but I think the Giants can probably have interest in him.
Mm-hmm. Rangers,
you know, pitching is the name of the game, and you know, like I said, a new environment can really be a good thing for an athlete. You know, a fresh start.
We're talking now with Keith Hernandez. He has a new book coming out titled "I'm Keith Hernandez." You want to check out a book signing Tuesday, May 15th. He'll be at the Barnes & Noble on Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. And Thursday, for all you Long Islanders out there, he'll be at Book Review in Huntington, right down the street from you.
I'm going. I'll be at the Book Review because that's like right. I live in Oyster Bay, so I'm going to drive over and say hi that day. But let's talk about the book a little bit. Now, I read your first book, the one that was called If at First, if I recall correctly, about the 86 Mets, right?
Yes.
And this is more of a as you say, even in your introduction, it's a prequel. It's kind of like the coming of age of a ball player. I thought the most interesting parts of it were the father-son aspect. I mean, obviously, your dad was very, very demanding, and I think you rightfully give him credit for the fact that you got to the major leagues, but that had to be a tough relationship as well.
Well, actually, My father was an ex-player and didn't make it. Got hit in the head, and his eyes went bad, and he was a very good fielding first baseman and looked like he was on his way, and it shortened his career. When we were kids growing up, he was wonderful. Just when I went to high school, and another coach, he wasn't the coach, and he kind of lost control. That's when it started becoming an issue between him and I. And he would, he kind of lived vicariously through me, and he put all of his heart and soul into my brother and I. My brother had a good career in college and minor leagues. He just couldn't let go. I always remember an article that I read about in Sports Illustrated a long time ago about Chris Evert, the tennis player, and her father taught her how to play tennis, and when he turned her over to, I think it was Nick Bollettieri, the academy down in Florida, he kind of washed his hands from it and told her, okay, it's out of my hands now, and let her go. My dad wasn't able to do that, and so we had a lot of problems. But he was a great father. A lot of people think, that I'm beating up on him. I was very sensitive to that. I had a wonderful childhood growing up. I grew up in a loving, caring family, my mom and dad. It's just too bad that my dad died a year after I retired, because we were just starting to talk, about our relationship.
Right.
And then he got cancer and he got ill, and it was just we didn't have a chance to really, clear the air and talk about it and come to terms with it.
Right. Well, that's my point about the book. It's a very personal book. It's much more personal than your other books. What were you trying to get across here besides telling your story? It seemed like you were trying to get some of that out as well, maybe like as some kind of catharsis about, your relationship with your dad.
Well, I think the main thing about the book was that we were going to do my whole life, and then we realized around 2 years in that it would be a book that would have been 900 pages. 800
I'm sure people
pages.
Would have read
Little
too,
Brown
Keith.
Wanted 90,000 words, which is around 320 pages, which the book is. So we kind of realized, okay, let's talk about. I mean, people in New York. This is not a book for mainly. It's not a provincial book for New Yorkers.
No.
New York fans saw me, the finished product. I came here as a star player, one of the better players in the game, and this is a book, okay, this is my journey when I started as a young kid in Little League, high school, minor leagues, and my struggles early in my career, in my major league career. And I wanted to really let them know of the fragility and the insecurities that I had. And it's not a soapbox. I just think I'm like anybody else, and I have my doubts. And I wanted to really put that out there, how difficult it was and all the obstacles I had, all the ups and downs and a lot of downs, and how I persevered and finally made it. Because the book really ends, even though it bounces around, and there is a little bit of Met stuff in there, but it doesn't go in chronological order.
No.
But it basically ends at the end of April 1980, when I had a great April, after my MVP year and my batting title year. And I've always had a bad April. When I won the batting title in 1979, I hit 232 in April. I hit 300 every other month. And I just look, if I'd have hit 300 that month, I might have hit 370.
Wow.
That was the first April. I went into that 1980 season, and I said, okay, another April was still like a cloud over my head, and I had a great April. And when May 1st came, that's when I realized that I belonged on the field with the rest of these guys.
And this was after you had already won an MVP.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I was always – I mean, Rick Hummel was the writer for
St. Louis,
the Post-Dispatch in St. Louis, and I had had a I struggled in 75, got sent down. 76, I had a terrible first half, benched. The team fell out of it early. I got to play every day the second half of the year. I hit 333 for the second half, In 77, I had a breakout year, hit 291, 15 home runs and 91 RBIs. In 78, I hit 255. I have a terrible year, terrible second half.
Mm-hmm.
And in 79, I have this great year. So Rick Hummel goes, okay, which is the, going into spring training in 80, he goes, okay, which is the real Keith Hernandez? So I had that. I had to put a back-to-back season, and I felt that.
Right.
And so when I had that April in 80, I said, I am a major leaguer. And that's what I wanted to put in that book, and I think it's done pretty well.
It's a very honest book. I mean, you know, you're not, you know, shy about either your shortcomings or your accomplishments in the book, but I just wanted to share this with Dan, because Dan hasn't read the book. I got an advanced copy. There's a really interesting passage, I guess it's around 1980, where you talk with Pete Rose, and he actually gives you the math of how to hit 300.
I want to hear this.
Yeah, right? He says, you know, you need 30 hits out of every 100 at-bats, and you can do that, right? It's very interesting how you worked it out, because I think you had, like, 22 hits in your first 100, so then you realized you needed 38 the next 100.
This is,
right?
In layman's terms,
exactly.
Analytics.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
But that was when I started turning it on. I was 77 when Pete came up to me and said, you can't look at the game every day. You know, you'll drive yourself crazy. You got to look at it in terms of a month, and which is basically 100 at bats. I walked a lot, so for me, so every 100 at bats, if you get 32 hits, you only need 28 to still be hitting 300 the next time. And then, you know, the most profound thing he said was that, you know, at the end of the year, you got 600 at bats. A 300 hitter, 6 times 30 is 180 hits. In 600 at bats, he goes, a 250 hitter, mm-hmm. which is, you know, an average player. You know, you do the math there. It's, let me see, 6 times 25 is
150.
What, guys?
150.
One. So, you know, you're talking 30 hits in a course of a season that separates a 250 hitter from a 300 hitter. And Pete would say, how many at bats do you go? Well, it's 10-0 one way or the other. And it's your last at bat. If you're in Atlanta and it's hot as heck on a day game, and you give that at bat away, he says, "I've never given it bat away."
Yes.
So I've never forgot.
You know what else he said? He said it's 5 hits a month. There's a difference between hitting 300 and 250.
That's
amazing.
Just think about that.
Yeah.
It's you know, I never thought of it in those terms,
right.
And it just struck me, and that was the one. Great piece of advice from Pete.
That's really cool. Another really cool thing is your Twitter persona here. I mean, I think we went on this podcast. We started it in obviously late March, and we were just about to get recorded, start recording one of our episodes. And I was like, "Hey, Wally, I think Keith Hernandez is on Twitter." And you didn't have
we both followed immediately.
You didn't have like the at Keith Hernandez handle, so we weren't sure if it was actually you. Then we see more stuff coming in. We see
The blue check mark.
We see the blue check mark. We see the followers totally, and we see the. The Keith Hernandez, the nice long paragraph, so eloquently put. Just talk about joining Twitter. Now, I think today you have 67,000 followers, which is pretty impressive in a month span. And are you enjoying Twitter? What's your feedback? I want to hear from you and how you're enjoying this Twitter experience.
Well, at first, I was on Twitter a long time ago, and I just didn't like it, and I got off in a couple years. And then when Rusty Staub passed away, I came back and kind of... Just felt I needed to go on there and say something, and then I was going to promote the book as well as my. I started a clothing line, an apparel line, a T-shirt line, and that was basically why I went on. But I have always loved to write, and I mean, I always got A's in creative writing. I always loved English literature, and I've always liked to write, and I. 2 years of typing in high school, and that was probably the one class that I got the most out of in that's as far as practical going forward in life.
That you're still using, right?
And you can see
so
it
I can
tweets.
Type, and my thoughts come out of my head and go right on, you know, the computer.
So no ghostwriter or anything, huh?
I'm sorry.
No ghostwriter. I noticed this is all you.
No, it's all me. It's all me. And I wound up enjoying it. All of a sudden, within 2 days, I had 5,000 followers. And then the third day, I had 10,000.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the week, I had 25, almost 30. And I was enjoying it. So and then I found out how to video. And then I put my cat on one morning. And all of a sudden, that just... just blew up. And so now I have almost, 70,000 followers, and I enjoy it. It takes around a half hour to do that in the morning. I have a cup of coffee.
It's
and
a nice little morning routine, just, right?
Yeah.
You can get sucked into Twitter, though, and be on it for, like, sometimes I'll, when I'm covering a game, I'll start getting into, interactions with fans.
Oh, wow.
And it'll be like seven innings of me just, talking to fans and not paying attention to the game. Very dangerous. So does your cat know that he's a celebrity?
Haji's a celebrity. Question he is.
Yeah.
And, but the Twitter, I'm not going to write anything that's other than it's not going to be anything political or controversial.
Yeah.
It's not a place for it. And it's, I do what I do, and I have a following, and they all want to see a video of Haji, so they get very unhappy when I'm on the road, because obviously Haji's home. But
Keith, it was amazing, because I posted on Twitter that you would be joining us, and the amount of reactions that I got about your cat, forget about you. They're like, oh, yeah, Keith, yeah, that's great. I want to hear from Haji. I mean, can you believe that even to the point where I think it was on the road or it was at a Met game, the Seven Line Army had a cutout of your cat?
Yes. Seven Line Army had a cutout of him in Atlanta, and I wasn't at the game. I didn't work that, but Ron Darling texted me in the middle of the game. I was out having dinner, and he said, "You got the Haji's here. They got a big old." So I was at a sushi place that had the game on, and so I texted Greg Picker, our producer, in the truck, and said, "Put Haji back on again. I want to see it. I missed it." And so they around two innings later, they showed him again.
The power of
Keith. So it's all great. It's all great fun. And I just had a photo shoot with Wall Street Journal. They came to my house, and it was me and Haji were doing portraits inside the house. So there's going to be some kind of article, obviously, in the Wall Street Journal. I don't know when it's coming out, but Haji's a star.
And you're going to create a monster here. The cat's going to demand, fresh sushi every night for dinner.
Oh, he's already a monster. He's a prima donna.
I see you have, this contraption. Have you seen he has,
No,
it's the most amazing thing ever. It makes me want to be a cat, because he's got, the contraption where he can climb up the steps.
Oh,
he can go down. He's got,
one of those cat apartment things?
Like a tube.
It's like a condo or something, right?
Yes, I have an outdoor cage for him, which is pretty extensive, so it gives him a lot of room to roam and does different levels. And I've got inside the house, I've got windows that are up on the high ceilings that go around the living room. So I built a catwalk around with a ladder going up for him.
Wow!
And so the Bengal is from the Asian tree leopard, believe it or not. So they like to be above and up high and climbing. And so I try to make him as happy as possible.
Keith,
he's 15. He's 15 going on
15.
4. He's in great shape.
He's young. He's young. Keith, talking about Sag Harbor, and I grew up in Manorville, so we're pretty close. So I know how far how long it is for you to travel to Citi Field. And I know you were on a local radio station about a month ago, and you made this, you said that the cops know your car. So
that was a stupid thing to say. I get no special treatment.
I was going to say, did the cops pull you over and say, what the hell, man? I mean, you blew our cover.
No, that was a dumb thing to say. There are Met fans out there, and everybody has Waze now.
It helps.
Waze.
I like that answer.
And,
better
Waze is great because, when I drive into the park, there's traffic, and it gets me around all the bad things. And then in spring, with the LIE, they're always paving, so they shut it down. So I'm always on Waze so I can get home fast, get to the ballpark fast. And I have a little bit of a lead foot, I'll admit that.
Yeah, we had Ron Darling. Ron Darling was on a couple weeks ago, and he said that...
He loves driving with you.
I said, what is it like to drive with Keith Hernandez? He said, listen, he had the batting champion, 379. He got the eye. He's got a 20/20 vision.
He said, you get him there fast.
Ronnie's got a lead foot too,
That's what he said.
He did say that. He copped to that as well. By the way, before we let you go, I just got to say, I read the book very carefully, and you grew up in the Bay Area. Obviously, you're a music fan. You mentioned Frank Zappa. You mentioned Jeff Beck. You mentioned Grand Funk Railroad. I didn't see one mention of the Grateful Dead. Is that even legal to grow up in San Francisco and not mention them?
I was never a Deadhead. I like some of their stuff, but I... not a lot. My kids, ironically, are all Grateful Dead fans, but I never was that big a fan of the Grateful Dead. I was more a fan of the Jefferson Airplane when they were the Jefferson Airplane, not the Starship.
Right. Wow.
What about Hot Tuna.
Oh yeah, I love them.
But you guys are talking over my head right now.
You know, San Francisco.
Santana. He's a San Francisco guy, right?
Yep. So there was a lot of good music that came out of there. But I like music in general. My parents were music lovers, so I like Andy Williams, you know, Frank Sinatra. I like symphony music.
Yeah.
Wow. I like jazz. I have a wide range of interests.
Yeah, it comes through in the book. Let me just remind everybody out there, the book is called I'm Keith Hernandez. You got to get it. It's a really, as I said, it's a personal book. It's an honest book. It's a real look at the man that Keith Hernandez, or the young man Keith Hernandez was, and the man that he's grown into now. Keith, we really appreciate having you on today.
Great.
Look forward to seeing you at the book
event. One more thing. The book's coming out. It's on the shelves on May 15th.
May 15th, yes, a week from today.
Yep.
Man, I will see you in Huntington next week.
Thank you, Keith.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much, Keith. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Wow. I could talk to Keith.
That was great. I know, we could talk to him about it. We don't even talk baseball with the guy.
I could talk to him all day long.
Really amazing. Really good conversation.
I forgot to mention the fact that at the Manorville Starbucks, that's the one stop you make before you get on the expressway to get back from Sag Harbor to the Citi Field. My brother was there, Jamie Canobia.
Right.
Accidentally stepped on Jamie's foot.
Keith did. I hope he wasn't wearing spikes.
but Jamie doesn't care. Jamie's he's the only Met fan in our family. We have a family full of Yankee fans, and he goes, I don't even care. He stepped on my foot.
It's like, you know, I'll never wash this foot again.
Yeah, pretty much like that.
Yeah, pretty cool.
But that was awesome. I mean, Keith was great. He was everything I thought he was going to be and more. I mean, the book is, I can't wait to get my hands on the book. I want to read it.
It's a really, like I said, it's an honest book. And, you know, he talks about his struggles. He talks about, you know, crying when he got sent down. You know, one thing I wanted to ask him about and I didn't. He had a really prickly relationship with Bob Gibson. Bob Gibson was an absolute son of a bitch to young players.
Really? Like the old guard. I can really see it. I mean, this guy was an angry man on the mound. So.
And that's why I meant to ask him. I think it's different now. I think free agency, you know, it's been great for the players, but it's changed relationships. You know, like everybody's friendly with everybody, even on other teams.
Yeah.
This guy wasn't friendly to rookies on his own team.
It was interesting with the Harvey stuff, and the biggest thing I took away from the Harvey was this guy pitching himself off the team.
Yeah.
Because the reason with that is because if Harvey gets sent down, the reason he turned down the
well, he had good reasons to do that.
Is because then the Mets control you. Like,
right.
They could not bring you up. If he goes to he becomes a free agent, he goes to a new team, Scott Boras will put in that contract, Matt has to be up by, 15 days or he's another free agent. So,
listen, let me tell you something. When they came to him with this idea, we're going to send you down to the minors, he said, give me a couple of minutes to think about it. First thing he did was call Scott Boras. Scott Boras said, what are you, crazy? 5 minutes after you're a free agent, you'll have another job.
Yep.
You turn it down. And of course he turned it down. And there's nobody in that Mets clubhouse who thought he was wrong to turn down that assignment.
Yeah, once again, I'm going to thank Keith Hernandez. Thank you, Wally, for getting him on the show. And Tuesday, May 15th, the book I'm Keith Hernandez. If you want to go for a book signing at Barnes & Noble on 555 Fifth Avenue, Manhattan, and then Thursday, May 17th, he'll be at the book review in Huntington from 6 to 8 p.m. You don't want to miss that. He's just a great guy. I mean, I just thoroughly enjoyed talking to him.
Yeah, he's very down-to-earth and knowledgeable about a lot of things, besides baseball. So definitely, I'm going to go to Huntington myself. As I said, I'm going to go to the book review. So, we'll go hang out with Keith that day. That's May 17th, you said?
Yeah, May 17th I'll be there. 6 to 8.
Okay.
Thank you once again to Keith Hernandez. Moving forward here with the show, Wally. Yankees and Mets have another busy week full of games. The Yankees tonight got 3 with the Red Sox. They're going to be avoiding Chris Sale.
They are. They get Pomerantz and then Price and then I think Porcello on Thursday. But before we go crazy about, pivotal series and all, it's a long way to go. It's only May, and they're within a game of one another. So unless one of them sweeps, it's really not going to make that much of a difference.
I will say that the buzz is back.
Oh, yeah.
I'm getting 03-04 vibes. I'm feeling like these are the two best teams in Major League Baseball. Even if one team sweeps the other, they're still the two best teams in Major League Baseball.
Without a doubt.
Record-wise. You have the Red Sox playing with, I don't know if Mookie Betts will be in the lineup tonight. Got hit in the back on a pitch, going to second base.
If he can make it, he'll be there.
Yeah, but Mookie Betts has been outstanding. I mean, they have two great closers in Chapman and Kimbrel that are both on their game. They got the young stars with Bogarts, Betts, Benintendi, the Yankees, obviously, with their young baseball. baby Bombers and Gleyber Torres.
And by the way, they don't like each other.
And that too. They add that wrinkle into the fact that this is the first time or the first time they're playing in the Bronx since the brawl. I know. Yes, right. Network is running out promos with dubbing it as a had a big boxing promo.
See that even though they're all against violence. Right on the field, but when they need it,
they're calling it a 15 round. I love how they always do that too. Whenever the non boxing people talk boxing, it's always 15 rounds.
It's a 15 round road trip they haven't had in 35 years, and it's a heavyweight slugfest. And the other thing is, there's no place for that on the field until we need a promo.
Yeah, let's see if I know Joe Kelly's been making the rounds, and he's like now a cult hero in Boston for not even hitting Tyler Austin the right way, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't remember. I only watch real. I watch professional fights. I'm sorry.
Well, Joe Kelly, he sat for his suspension. He sat in the bleachers at Fenway.
Is that right?
And then they showed him on the Jumbotron at the Bruins game.
Okay, so this dude is making. His
he's
15 like,
yeah, exactly. He's savoring in all this for hitting a guy on a 2-1 pitch and fooling him.
Whatever. I mean, look, they're going to play three baseball games tonight. I assume there will be no fisticuffs. And you know what? There is a chance. I'm saying it's not going to be a pivotal series. I don't think it will because there's a lot more to go. But there is a chance to send a message one team to the other.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The last time they played, it was the Red Sox sending the message, taking
right,
two or three.
Right, and the Yankees were down, and Red Sox were up, and they've kind of switched roles in the past couple of weeks.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, at that time, the Yankees were, got to like 9-9 by that point, and, the last thing we saw in Fenway when the Yankees were playing the Red Sox was, you know, Giancarlo Stanton missing that fly ball, it falling next to him, the 14-0 loss, the brawl, and now the Red Sox have kind of come back down to life. The Yankees are on this historic pace right now, and so I do think, yes, it is only May, but I feel like we're starting. This is like another round.
Well, let me just point out to you, 2009.
Maybe the playoffs.
2009. The Yankees were getting crushed by the Red Sox until they went there for a five-game series in August, which I covered for Newsday. The Yankees swept five
games. Was that 07?
Was it 07?
I was at the fifth game. I think Giambi hit a home run.
All I'm telling you is that, like, you know, nothing that happened. Yes, things that happened in May do matter because every game matters when you calculate the standings. But it's a little bit early to get crazy.
Did you see this? The Yankees and Red Sox, the MLB just announced that they will be playing a two-game set in London next year.
Yes, I did.
What is the point of this?
I don't know, but if I can get somebody to pay my way, I'm all for it.
I understand it would be a cool road trip, but do the English like baseball?
They sit through cricket, which is awful. Have you ever seen a cricket match?
No, I've seen
it
nothing.
It takes days.
Yeah, I don't want. I mean,
and
baseball
they play
games
like
are
in
long
shirts
enough.
And ties.
Yeah, baseball games take long enough. We're working on.
But I will tell you
hours.
This: it's a great deadline thing because I covered a bunch of fights in England, and you know, generally they don't give a rat's ass about what time it is here. They do it at 11 o'clock there, which means it's only 6 o'clock here.
Yeah, so how's that going to work? Is it going to be a day game?
I would think it's going to be a day game here and a night game over there. I don't know.
It's five hours ahead.
What if it's a day game over there? It'll be like 6 a.m. here.
I just don't get it. I understand what baseball is trying to do here. I mean, the NFL did.
Well, they've done it in Mexico this weekend. They've done the Yankees open to Japan, the Mets open to Japan.
And the Indians also. Indians played a series in Puerto Rico, which is really cool. That's when Francisco Lindor hit a home run, and that was an awesome moment.
Yeah, so, it's just the way look. It's a way to make money.
But there's no ties, though. I mean,
it's
there's Mexican baseball. Yeah, of course. There's Mexican baseball players. There's Puerto Rican baseball players. I don't know any baseball
players. JP Conlon, he's Irish.
From Belfast, right?
Yeah.
Pitched last night for
there
the Mets.
Go.
How cool was that, seeing his family? I still love those moments.
Yeah, it was cool. So maybe they're trying. Look, it's any way they can sell jerseys over in England, they'll do it. They can sell Yankee hats in England, they'll do it. That's what this is all about. The players are on board as well because they get a piece of it.
Yeah, so how does it work? Are they going to have extra days off after? Because
I don't know. It's not like, you know, when they went to Japan, obviously they did because that's a killer. But, you know, this is not that long a trip. And when you come back, you get the 5 hours back. Let's say you leave, if you leave London at midnight, you get back here like around, you know, earlier than you left.
Yeah, so maybe they would give them 2 days
you would
off.
Get a day or two. Yeah, it's not that two. Big a deal. It's not like going, you know, to the Far East.
So maybe tonight when you head into the clubhouse, you can ask some of the players what they think of it.
I think it might be a topic of discussion, yeah.
Yeah, because I got to figure, you know, they're interested in it. They just saw it. I know it's 2019, so they're not exactly thinking about it.
Some of them might not even be Yankees at that point.
Yeah, you're going to have to ask the right guys. You're going to have to ask Gleyber. You're going to have to ask
I shouldn't ask
Duhar.
CeCe. Is that what you're saying?
Don't ask CeCe because did you also see this, Wallace? CeCe says he'll retire if the Yankees win the World Series.
Well, now that he knows they're going to London next year, maybe he'll take that back.
I don't see CeCe walking around enjoying that.
Well, I'll tell you, I think he would like it. But here's the other thing. If somebody's going to offer him $5 million to pitch again next year, he'd be crazy. to retire.
I mean, he's throwing lights out. I mean, right now he has a 1.39 ERA through his six starts.
And I keep mentioning him as an example of, you know, why it's foolish for Matt Harvey to say, I'm going to cling to, you know, what got me here, when a guy like CeCe Sabathia, who was a better pitcher than Matt Harvey when they were both at their best, is able to make this adjustment and, you know, continue his career years after we thought he'd be done.
On the flip side, look at CeCe. It didn't take him overnight. He didn't do it overnight.
But he was willing to put the work in to do it.
He had a better attitude, at least, but the results weren't there. I mean, he had a few years where Yankee
fans
couldn't
stand
him.
You have to commend him for that. You really do. You have to commend a guy to stick out something that doesn't seem to be working.
Through that, and then make it work. You know, he had the problems with alcohol, going to rehab.
Sure.
I mean, this guy's been an awesome Yankee.
He's a pretty admirable guy when you look at that whole body of work.
Yeah, I feel like the entire clubhouse just, you know, they love him. He's like the de facto captain.
I know you think that. I know.
Is that not true?
No, it's not true. He's a pitcher. He only works once every
That's
5 days.
Gonna say.
They never see him.
That was what I was going to say. He's de facto captain, even though he's a pitcher who usually aren't leaders. But I feel like they look at him and Gardner as the elder statesman.
Well, they do, because they are the elder statesman. And they both, as I told you, both sit at the choice end of the room where you can escape into the off-limits area, like, right away.
Yeah, where you can get a nice big bowl of Captain Crunch.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but for the Mets, they have this year, they're going to finish off this series with Cincinnati. Hopefully they can keep getting fat out in Cincy. And I'm not talking about the Skyline Chili. I'm talking about the Cincinnati pitching staff, which is pathetic. The Mets pitching staff isn't much better, as they let them get back in the game last night. But you got to figure the Mets are going to feast more on that pitching. And then from there, they go into Philly and they face Gabe Kapler and the Philadelphia Phillies.
And the resurgent Philadelphia Phillies. But you know what? The important game, or the interesting game for me, is tonight. I want to see what Vargas does. He cannot be as bad as he's looked so far.
Man, he has looked. I mean, he's throwing 84-mile-an-hour fastballs, and he's leaving them over the middle of the plate. He's getting absolutely shelled. And this is the guy that the Mets signed as to be like a stalwart in the middle of that rotation for 2 years.
You know what surprised me? I had never met him before, and I covered his last game. He's a small guy.
Really?
Really small guy. I mean, I don't know what they list him at, but I mean, you know, he's no bigger than me. He's like 5'9", 180 pounds.
And this is a guy who won, what, 16, 17 games last year in the American League?
Yeah.
And the guy that the Mets brought in here to kind of shore up the back of the rotation. The Mets have issues beyond – the Mets have issues pitching, because now it's not just – you can't just say DeGrom has been great, because now
Syndergaard got lit up last time.
Well, Syndergaard, he just hasn't dominated yet. I want to see Syndergaard dominate. I mean, we talk about him being Thor and him, you know, all the attention that he gets. He hasn't put together that performance where it's been like 8 or 9 innings, 13, 14
and
strikeouts.
The alarming thing is he's not getting swings and misses.
I feel like DeGrom the other night got more swings and misses than Syndergaard has his entire season. So I don't know what's going on with him.
And the funny thing, the back end of the Mets rotation starts like after two guys. That's not the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, well, Matt's looked decent in his last start. That's one positive you can take from this. And Blevins and Ramos are pitching better out of the bullpen. If you want to look for some positives here, the Braves got swept last week. So the Mets, they still are only 1.5 games out of first place. So let's just pump the brakes a little bit. If I would have told you, Wally, on May 8th that the Mets would be 3 games over 500, 1.5 games back, still ahead of the Nationals, I think you'd take it.
Yeah, but that only works in a vacuum. That only works if you don't know about the 11-1 start.
If you had a collective amnesia.
Right. If you just parachuted in now, you'd say, wow, Mets are doing pretty good. And then somebody would say, hey, you should have seen them 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, but just like Keith Hernandez said, it's a veteran lineup. I think this is a lineup that's going to shore up. They take professional bats. That's the biggest difference between last year and the years before, when they were trotting out, you know, AAA players or 4A players.
It's true.
So now these guys have track records. And maybe they get more rest. That's one more thing. They got to give more rest to Adrian Gonzalez.
He's a guy that's got to be managed all year.
He's
got to
play 4 games
last
a week.
Night.
Right. If he'd be more productive if they can get him into 4 games a week. They can put Bruce at first. They can get Nimmo into the outfield, get a little younger. Mm-hmm. So I think the Mets will snap out of this. I do think Mickey has a little bit of magic. I was about to call him mediocre Mickey coming in here, but I do still think the Mets have a little magic, and I do think they're going to be in the thick of things, whether it's the second wild card or it's the wild card.
Okay, I'll go with that. I think they're good enough for that, but the pitching's got to come around.
We'll see. We'll see. As for the Yanks, like I said, they got the Red Sox coming up this week, a big 3-game set. Then they got 3 with the really hard-hitting A's, which is going to be really interesting. But right now, the Yankees could beat the 27 Yankees. That's how good they're playing.
That's insane.
You don't believe that?
No, I don't.
Got to cue up Stratomatic.
I don't.
Let's put in the 2018 Yankees versus the 1927 New York Yankees.
All right, let's just let it play out. Let's talk about this a month from today and see where they are. I think they're going to be very good all year. Don't get me wrong. I think they're an extraordinary team. I think the fact that they came through a really rough stretch of games won almost
16-2
against really good teams.
16-2 against teams with a projected winning percentage of .551.
Yes, but we also know that baseball is a game of ebb and flow, of ups and downs. And
you
that
can't teams, predict baseball, Susan.
You can't predict baseball, a wise man says just about every night. But the truth is, they will hit a rough spot, you know? They had one early, and they will have another one.
There's
no doubt.
Yeah, that's the ebb and flow of baseball. But, you know, this team, during winning 15 of 16, Giancarlo Stanton hitting .237. Aaron Judge not exactly smoking the ball. And how about this with Aaron Judge? I feel like last year, all eyes were on Aaron Judge. Everything was about him and his home runs and this outstanding rookie season. Somehow, he blends in on this team.
Well, because you got a guy who even hit more home runs than him last year. But you know what? I still feel, honestly, when I'm at a Yankee game, I still feel that Judge's at-bats are better than Stanton's. I prefer to watch him.
Oh, they're must-watch. Absolutely. When
I'm
going tonight,
hitter.
I'm going. His at-bats are so much better, and that's one thing we're seeing from Judge. But now with Andujar up and all the attention Gleyber Torres is getting, and now Domingo Germán and some of the good Yankees offense here, Judge is kind of slipping in through the cracks, and that's a good thing because sophomore slumps are
might
a
be
real
better.
Thing.
Might be better, although I don't think he's the kind of guy that, you know, worries about pressure or, you know, a lot of eyes on him. If he was, he wouldn't have won the home run derby last year, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're talking about a guy who had a lot of scrutiny on him throughout his whole rookie season and was fine with it. Yeah, I think he's fine as an ensemble player there, but I also think that he doesn't have a problem carrying the team if he has to.
All right, before we go, Wally, on, you know, a couple weeks ago we did this on this day or on this week where we highlighted Chan Ho Park's bout with diarrhea.
Yeah, a memorable... People will run in to see that one.
Speaking of this next player, I don't know. He probably has had a lot of diarrhea in his life. He's Bartolo Colon. And it was yesterday, May 7th, on this day. But we'll just do it on this week here on the New York Baseball Podcast.
That's fine. We do whatever we want here.
Bartolo Colon did something in San Diego that's going to be remembered forever.
Colon looking for his first hit of the year. Oh. He drives one. Deep left field. Back goes Upton. Back near the wall. It's out of here. Bartolo has done it. The impossible has happened. The team vacates the dugout as Bartolo takes the long trot. His first career home run. And there will be nobody in the dugout to greet him. This is one of the great moments in the history of baseball. Bartolo Colon has gone deep.
Shattering glass there.
I want to say that was one of the longest
bases without needing oxygen.
Yeah, he didn't fall
That's
over.
Amazing.
He's still pitching today.
God, I miss Bartolo. Bartolo mania. Every 5 days in the Bronx, God, I miss it.
He's the best pitcher on the Rangers staff.
He might be the best pitcher on the Mets staff if he was still there.
They should have brought him back.
They really should have.
Just to watch him run around the bases, just
but
to watch him grab his gut
the
and
guy.
Jiggle it.
Yeah, but you look at him, you go, nah, how much longer can this go on?
Yeah, then he throws like eight no-hit innings like he did on Sunday Night Baseball. I mean, the guy is a treasure, and I really loved his time with the Yankees, and I even enjoyed it more his time with the New York Mets because he produced moments like that.
Yeah, and they paid him a lot more than the Yankees did.
Yeah, when he came back with the Yankees, that was when he was just starting
bucks.
His comeback. Right?
Yeah.
He came out of the bullpen, and he pitched really well out of the bullpen. Yeah. Then he started a few more games, and then he started getting more contracts. Has anyone had more lives than Bartolo Colon?
He's just an amazing guy. He really is. And when I can't wait to list Cooperstown's acceptance speech.
Oh, man, that's a lot of – I'm thinking that's a lot of gold to make that bust of his giant head.
You're not kidding, man.
There it is, another episode of New York Baseball Podcast in the books. Special thanks to our guest Keith Hernandez for joining us for 30 solid minutes in his hotel in Cincinnati. Great job from our super producer Nick Canobio. Great job out of you, Wally.
Thank you. Great job out of everybody in this room today, including Keith. I can't wait to see who we have next week.
Yeah, keep it tuned here. New York Baseball Podcast coming back next week.